Welcome to the Red Caps Podcast, a podcast where we dip our caps into the blood of our listeners and we ramble on about old school games. In today's episode, we are going to talk about weird dice. More specifically, we're going to talk to somebody who makes weird dice, and not the DCC style dice that look like somebody just melted a traditional one down a little bit and reshaped it and made it look funny. But rather, we're going to be talking with Alexander from Turning Dice, and he has created some bolt nut slash luggage lock style dice that really intrigued me when I first saw them. And I wanted to have a discussion with him because I figured anybody who makes dice that look that weird is probably interesting to talk to. We talk about a bunch of different topics, and I think you'll find it quite interesting. So as you know, no mortal can outrun a red cap. So as always, I hope you can sit back, listen, and enjoy. Ladies and gentlemen, I am joined by Alexander, who has quite possibly the oddest set of dice I have ever seen in my life. I was browsing around online and came across this post of these strange dice that to me looked like a combination of a luggage lock and a set of rosary beads. And I said, I need to talk to this person. And Alexander was gracious enough to come onto the show and chat to me a little bit about it. How are you doing today, sir?
Not bad. How about you, sir?
I'm doing great. So turning dice, these are, I know this is an audio, so it's going to be odd for people. I'll probably do a little video snippet on here. So if you're watching, if you're listening on Spotify, I'll put up a picture of these things, but they're dice that are done, like I said, kind of like a luggage lock, or how would you describe them maybe?
Well, I originally thought of them as a sort of a ring originally with, but luggage lock is actually a very good description. I first encountered somebody telling me that way a while back. It's like a luggage lock. I'm like, you are absolutely right. That is correct. It is pretty much like a luggage lock. My little brother and I developed the design. There are lines in between each number, and I'm just going to put it up for you. And those lines are supposed to be friction increasers. There is a band on the outside that's supposed to be a friction reducer, and then a flatter, very smooth side for the other side, so that way they won't lock together. And then, so it's a engineered thing. And then on the inside, my little brother did some very interesting mechanical engineering to make sure that they don't cock. The dice won't. Well, actually, when you're reading them, looking at them, there'll be an upside up face that will always be flat.
So how does one roll one? So is it because the every picture I've seen of them, they've either been on a stick or they've been on a chain or something along those lines. So is it, I do have, I've got one here. My wife bought me this D20 ring. So it's an actual ring that goes on your finger, and while it's on my finger, I can spin it and it'll end up on a number. Is it the similar idea that way where it spins on itself, or is it more you spin it around a stick or a chain or something?
You should definitely spin around a stick or a chain. We have I would have a concern that if somebody just put it on their finger and tried to spin it. number one, it could harm your fingers that way. Everything I'm selling these days is pretty much resin cast. So it is a hard thing to have around your finger and wouldn't be comfortable to wear. In addition, I love it because I can put 20, 30 dice on a chain and your fingers start running out of room after a while.
Yeah.
And you can also like have multiple chains and things like that. And it's fairly useful that way. Personally, I just take it and I've got like my necklace chain. And I'll just run it on my leg like three times and then stop and then read the numbers left to right on the position. So that way I've got like right now, I just rolled a 1 and 9. A 1 and 8, a 7, a 5, a 10, a 6, and a 10. So if I was doing like a, shall we say, 8d10 result for a high level Legend of Five Rings character, I would probably pick the 9, the 8, the 5, the 10, the 6, and the 7, and probably had a couple of dice left over for whatever I needed, and like reroll the 10.
Right. So are you using these for, are these your main go-to dice, or do you use these as a supplement to maybe more traditional dice, or?
Well, since I'm the only person making them, I probably will be the person using them the most.
Right.
I do use them in my gaming. We have what we're calling sort of like a 3D10 system, which is an open-ended 3D10 system that we're planning on releasing to Creative Commons at some point once we get that whole misunderstood. And like the OGL happened at possibly the worst time, because we're like very slow, very patient, very methodical gaming group. That's the way we play too, which sometimes leads to less than completely exciting combats. But so we were planning on releasing that system, and so open in 3D10 system. But I use that, and I use these dice. I've got a complete set of polyhedrals built for your average like D&D gaming group. If you're like, hey, I want to have 2d20 and d percentile and a d12, I've got all those problems already solved, and I'm making copies of those for sale, putting them up on eBay, putting them on, you know, if someone reaches out to me and wants a set of dice, I'm more than willing to make a commission set. I made a set of, let's see, my daughter is actually not polyamorous. What's the one? She's one of the, she's like the neutral sexuality one. And I'm like, well, they've got a flag for that, don't they? And she's like, sure. I'm like, yes, okay, let's make you a set, you know, two sets of dice that have those flag colors, and you know, wear them and play them and let me know what you think. And she loves them, so it's great. No, I'm willing to make all kinds of things. I plan on making a couple of trans sets, just because I've got friends who are trans. It's like, well, you know, hey, do you want to set the, you know, and the nice thing about them is that you wear them all the time. And if you're like, don't feel safe, you just tuck them in your shirt, and suddenly you aren't broadcasting as much. If, you know, you feel like I should maybe, you know, I may be getting the little
sketch area or something like that. Area.
Yeah. You know, it's just the way the world is. You got to think about your friends and allies.
So it's interesting. So it's, if it's meant to be worn, it kind of solves that problem of having spontaneous dice whenever you may need them. So it's allowing you to, wherever you are, you've got a randomizer essentially, without having to go digital with your phone or something. It's you've got a mechanical randomizer with you. You said you make them out of resin. Is this something like you do a 3D print first and mold it and then do a resin thing, or how does that process work?
Well, actually my current masters are from Shapeways. I did a 3D plastic printing through them. They were reasonably cheaply priced. So I went, hey, you know, let's do this. Let's try out this plastic, see how it works. The weirdest thing about the plastic I made it with is that it will not accept a material to like, it won't, nothing will bind to it. There's actually YouTube commissions or YouTube and blog posts about how you can't like paint it with something to make it smoother. You can't do anything like that. You just got to straight up polish it, and that's all you can do. And I was sort of unhappy when I found that out. But, you know, it's what it is. And then there's actually a 3D printing company that I'm going to talk to that, you know, or I've been talking to that understand my designs, have built me some stuff that, you know, I can now make masters with their style and do those. So,
yeah. I've watched a bunch of YouTube videos on traditional dice, people making traditional dice and what have you. I've got a resin 3D printer that I've used before, and I've tried making my own little dice. Didn't really work out that well for me, to be honest. But the videos I always find interesting, just on, you know, taking it and using like the vacuum chamber and stuff like that with it. Is that, you have to go through that whole process? Because theirs is obviously much more, there's much more volume in their dice, right? Because it's a larger circle, or larger contained orb, maybe I'll say, rather than
it's a solid object rather than a ring object.
Right.
I probably should, in order to make sure I don't have any bubbles in a process. I have struggled with getting my process right, and I finally, you know, sat down, watched the YouTube videos, made notes, did comparisons, things like that, and I now have a process I'm fairly certain I need to retest it again with a new resin that's close to the suggested unicone that my that Arcana Cast people suggest for dice making. And I will say that if you don't have your supports for the 3D printing, there is a significant problem with your dice will be funky. So.
Yeah, no, I've got the support there. Mine was more where I ran into issues with mine was some of the pips and stuff that I was putting on it weren't working out. The actual, you know, shape of the dice itself was okay. It was the faces I was putting on it. So when you're going through this, what was, I guess maybe question one is why? And then question two is how long is the process for whenever you go to do it? So why the style of dice for you particularly? Like it's something that you've had for a long while now. I went looking back and it's been years that you've been doing this. So obviously there's something there that's really grabbing you with it. So why these type of dice? And then how long does it take you to make a set for somebody?
So the short answer as to how long it takes me to make a set for somebody is we have, I can probably produce a simple one color, no particular complexity to it relatively quickly. It takes about, it's got a 5 hour dry time or work time where I can go in and I can do things. I can check it for bubbles, remove bubbles, things like that. And then there's a 24 hour cure time, plus the amount of time it takes me to like demold it, remove any additional material, the technical term for whatever the little pieces of plastic around it that aren't part of the actual dice themselves. Maybe a little bit of micro polishing just in case, looking it over for problems, and then painting. Probably I could have something done in 48 to 72 hours. Okay. So it's not a huge turnaround time. I've got some molds made. I've got things like that. But to give you an idea of how long an entrepreneurial process can be, I first had the idea for this in 95.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
And what happened was that, I don't know if you know what the SCA is. I know you guys have some up in Canada, but it's the Society.
That acronym sounds familiar to me, but fill me in.
Okay. So the Society for Creative Anachronism is basically a overblown annual birthday party for a history professor.
Okay.
1 year they went out and they had this history professor, and they're like, hey, you know, we'll dress up like knights and people and
do all this stuff. Okay. Now I know what the SCA is. Sorry, yes. Right. It's really advanced LARPing that actually is somewhat historically accurate.
Yes. They aim for a little bit of historical accuracy.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, Mike and Liz both were in the SCA in Texas.
Yes. And that's actually probably why it rang a bell, because I remember marking that down on my notes of things that I don't believe I actually asked him about during that interview with Save for Half. But yes, that is why the SCA was in the back of my head when you mentioned it.
So we did that. I was doing that at that point, and there, every once in a while, you'll run across a person who is just such a professor that they will accidentally lecture you on all sorts of subjects. And it's whatever's in their head, you know, and they'll explain to you and talk you through things. He explained like I don't know if you've ever heard, Sleeping Beauty, or no, not Sleeping Beauty, Cinderella. Okay. And that the explanation for the reason why it says glass slipper is because it's a mistranslation of the French from fur slipper to glass slipper. So the words glass and fur are very close to each other in French.
Okay.
So somebody went, oh, they don't mean fur, they mean glass. And that's the reason why we have glass slippers in our, you know, sort of fantasy world, as opposed to fur boots, which would have been more historically accurate for the period her shoes came from.
Makes sense.
Yep. So he would lecture on things like that. And like, you know, hey, you know, I've done this research and that research. And he was talking about dice. And what you do is, he talked about the standard, you know, you've got a Platonic solids, which are mostly the standard dice except for the D10.
Yep.
And, you know, so all these dice are like, you know, they're from the days of the Greeks. You know, who's going to, you know, these were created way back in the day. And we've taken all those, we've turned them into our random probability generators. And you've probably seen the ancient, you know, like Egyptian D20 and things like that online if you've, you know, spend any amount of time in large numbers of nerd groups. So, but he was talking and he said, you know what, if you need to make any sort of even number die, what you do is you take the two sides. You know, if you wanted to have a D14, you take a seven-sided object and a seven-sided object and stick them together, and that would make your D14. And when he said that, it just sort of sprang into my mind of like, why don't we put it on a ring? And I asked him that. And he stopped and he didn't lecture for the rest of the night because he was thinking about it. He was like going,
yeah, you nerd sniped him.
Right? You know, it's just but it was an accident. I didn't mean to interrupt his story. It's a great story. It's you know, I was learning about dice, it was a fun thing, and he just had never run across that idea before. And at that point, I let the idea rest. And so let's go with, so now let's go to, oh, I want to say 2012. And the dates are probably going to be a little off. Adult attention deficit disorder, time isn't all that, you know, it's much more flexible for me than it is for some people. So my little brother and I, my little brother's an entrepreneurial developer. It's one of his like sort of pet project things he does. He's made good money and done good things for communities. I don't know if you know what South Oak Cliff is in Denver, but it's a historically African-American community, sort of like Five Points in Denver or other, you know, sort of conclaves of African-American, you know, sort of enforced living conditions around a large city that would happen. It wasn't quite big enough to be its own thing, but it's part of the community. And my little brother has gone out and helped, you know, little kids from that community, you know, learn about entrepreneurial in order to help them sort of, you know, learn to get themselves out of, you know, their own life and into better chances and opportunities just by teaching them. Here's, you know, sort of steps you need to take and here's what you want to do. And
right.
You know, it's sort of like a entrepreneurial sort of, you know, development.
Mentorship. Yeah.
Right. And it's, you know, it's great. I love him for doing that. And, you know, and he was like, you know what, I need to brush up on that a little bit. What do you have? And I said, well, okay, I just thought up this idea for a TV show. And TV shows are very incredibly expensive. They are very incredibly expensive. And I didn't, get sourcing for it properly and it fell apart. And then my brother went, okay, you know, what's your next idea? And I'm like, you know, I need to have more knowledge in the RPG community. I need people to understand, you know, who I am so that they can believe in me a little bit more. Okay, I've got this dice idea. And that was the dice idea from 95. So, you know, now we're up to 2012. And then I've been working on the process ever since then to produce them and to talk about them and to chat with them and you know, put them into games. And I actually have a way to where if I took and rolled them and I turned them 180 degrees from where I would read them to where the camera would read them, it will show in you guys what I rolled. There's essentially a line that when you look at it is flat to you, the camera, and then everybody can see what dice I rolled. The only problem is that I'm always looking at a flipped version, so I have a hard time sometimes reading. It's like, is that a 9 or 6? That's a 9 now. Can't you read that? I'm like, well, it's flipped for me. So, yeah.
So, I'm sure the way I described it at the beginning of saying, hey, these are the weirdest dice I've seen, and I've seen all the DCC dice. I'm sure I'm not the only person that's had that sort of reaction to these. So as you've started putting them out into the world, what has been, like, once people get their hands on them, what has been the reactions been like? Have you been seeing people using them? And in what ways are they using them versus how maybe you expected they would? Because I assume once a product is in somebody else's hands, you got no idea what's going to happen with it. So,
as a matter of fact, no, I haven't seen them enough in the wild. I do need to really actually put more out there, make more. I had a problem with getting my masters polished. They weren't polished right the first time, so I've had to go back and like relearn and repolish the entire set. My wife, I love her very much. She hates the noise of sanding, and I don't blame her. That's just like, you know,
yeah.
It's like, oh my gosh. So it annoys her. I've got a goal and I can ignore it. And she's just like, you know, I love you, honey, but please don't do that around me. I'm like, but you want me in your life 24/7. When am I going to do this? But you know, it's one of those things. It's just, you know, a long, slow process. I'm willing to spend the time. I'm willing to spend the effort. And I'm willing, you know, and if it doesn't, it like, my little brother, again, with the entrepreneurial studies thing, he's like, it takes 11 to, you know, 15 years for an idea to catch on. And that's, yeah,
I mean, everybody's been rolling these, you know, small dice now forever in the same way. There's a whole industry built up around them. So to get people to change a mindset on that is probably a difficult marketing thing. But I think just on the basis of what they are and how they're laid out, I mean, they obviously caught my attention, and I assume that every time you put up a picture or have a video out of them, they do that. You should. One thing I didn't find, I don't know if you've got one somewhere. I went looking, trying to find a video of them in use. And if you haven't done that, I highly recommend going and making a video of demonstrating how you use the dice. because that was part of the reason I had to ask, because I was like, these look really cool, but how do you use them? So definitely suggest doing that if you haven't, or if maybe I just didn't find it somewhere.
Yeah. Actually, I've got several videos up on my YouTube. So we initially did a display of my wife doing hex nuts on YouTube with the numbers on them, because that's basically, in some ways, what it is essentially a hex nut with funky internal stuff. And then I need to probably put some up on YouTube of me rolling my dice. And I have Instagram, which was my favorite until I discovered Mastodon. So my social media is like...
How have you liked Mastodon? Because that's how you and I communicated from the get-go at the beginning, was on Mastodon. I haven't fully exited off of Twitter. I don't know if I ever will. I use both pretty interchangeably. But how have you found the Fediverse and Mastodon overall?
I really enjoy it. I think I need to be careful. That's how good it is. Dice Camp is an amazing place. They have their own app, which actually works really great. It's for us Android users. Actually, there's not one for the iPad people, but you know, it's, if you're an Android user and you like the sort of gaming geeky nerdy community, Dice Camp's your go-to place. And then of course, you know, you're on the that huge list by
Yohai. Yeah, he has me on his massive Mastodon or Fediverse list. Yohai, for anybody who doesn't recognize the name, is the creator of Karen. He was on the show in December, I want to say. November or December.
Right around there. Just recently, he popped on. I was like, you know what? I don't think Instagram's doing me great favors yet, so I need to do it. And, oh, I do have another toy I just developed recently. So I don't know if you've heard of Cobots or Locus. They are a robot. So they're a robot manufacturing people, and they make robots to run around, and basically they don't want you to use them like little carts, but that's essentially what they are. They're little one-man station things. As a matter of fact, I have a toy.
Okay. So this is,
and it's supposed to stand like this, but to get it full in frame, that's what it essentially looks like. And then you've got a second tray about mid-mast, and we put three totes on it, and it runs around, and we have people around out on the floor, and they pick the material and they throw it in the bin. And they just sent us our "You've Done a Million Picks with Our Robots" swag gift list. And one of the things I did was, I, you know, probably shouldn't say it's too loud, but I took their keychains they've given us, because nobody needs more than 5 or 6 keychains in their life after a certain point, especially these days, because we're getting less and less keys.
I am trying real hard to eliminate keys from my life. I just, over the Christmas break, replaced our main front door lock with a keypad with the fingerprint thing and everything on it, so I don't even need to carry a house key anymore. What game changer, especially for the kid. I don't have to worry about him losing a key. He just goes up, uses the fingerprint reader, or if it doesn't work, he has a code. Choice. So amazing.
Man, that's going to be on the list of things for my wife. So, you know, they're not that popular for the number they've given us. So I took two of them and combined them into a single thing, and I now occasionally roll my D percentile. Just by, it's a little spinnery thingy. Do I have one? I don't think I do. Pardon my cough. But basically, it's a small chain that's got two rings on it, and I would take and I would spin the dice on it, and then read the results. And if I'm doing it while I'm picking, I just take and I flip the dice back on my thumb hand towards behind my hand instead of in front of my hand, and I can randomly generate dice, you know, random numbers all day long now.
So again, only because it's audio and I want to make sure I can give people an idea of what these look like. Hex nut was probably a good description, like a large thinner hex nut, or a luggage lock, turn dial, put around something like a keychain if it's a small one, or a necklace, or on a larger stick, and you can spin them and you get a randomized number. I noticed on some of them you had different shapes on the inside of it. So like some of them was like a triangle, other ones seem to have the full hex. Is there a difference between those, or is that different types of dice that I was seeing?
You're seeing different types of dice. Okay. If you, the D4 is basically a square because of course four sides. And if you look at the inside, it's kind of got sort of a bowed inverse clover sort of look to it. Like if someone put the petals of a clover and sort of like laid them over a square, you would then see the bowing inside points. And that's to make sure that they basically are, so the way that they don't kink, that's what the basic mechanics is that's how we handle it. Just by a little bit of bow, it won't rest on that bow properly. It wants to go to one of the notches, which, and the notches always point up towards a number. Right. So when I do odd number dice, which I've only done even dice so far, when I do odd number dice, it'll be even easier for people to, so that way they won't be confused by what ends up on top.
Gotcha.
And I can do them all the way up to D30s. I just have the 4 through 20. I can't really do a 3, a 2, or a 1, but you know, it's I would be worried about them getting enough randomness in a roll across the surface is where I get to that point.
All right. You've also done something else cool, which is the first for my time here on this podcast, is as a guest, you sent me a D12 list of possible topics, which is awesome. That is fantastic. I can't thank you. I'm going to now start asking this to other people and they're going to hate me because of it, but it's all because of you. But thank you for sending this to me. So I thought if you happen to have one, I don't know if you have one of your own D12s nearby, that we can take turns. We'll do a couple of these while time allows. I've got my traditional D12 and you've got your specialty D12. Yes. And I say you roll off one and I'll roll off one and you can roll off one and we'll see how we are for time.
Okay. All right. I figured, you know, number one, it's, you know, Liz and Mike off of the Safer Half podcast. They definitely enjoy D12s. So I'm like, yeah.
It is the best dice. I will say that, at least in the traditional format. So yes. All my D6, well, not all my D6s, but the D6s I prefer to use are all D12s with the numbers 1 through 6 on them twice.
Yes.
Just because they feel nicer in the hand, they roll nicer. Even my D4s are actually D8s with 1 to 4 on them twice because I prefer the nice rounder size dice. It's
right. No, I totally get you.
I can get a good spin off those, but anyhow, if you're ready for a D12 roll, spin us up.
Sure.
We're going to chat about it.
All right. And this is a D12, and you should be able to read.
We got a 9. All right. So 9 is actually that this works in well. So 9 was games that your group has built. So you mentioned that you were getting these D10s ready to go. You're doing a 3D10 system. So what's the game that you and your buddies are building that is using 3D10s? What's this game? Is it a fantasy game? Is it a, what genre?
Or is it? Well, so it was awesome. Originally built. To be sorry for speaking over you. It was originally built to be a cyberpunk type game. There's three gamers that are almost always there every week because we like just love role playing games. As a matter of fact, they've probably seen the most of my family. We've been to each other's weddings, anything, you know, like that. It's we literally call our children the gamer cousins because you know 27 years. Of us hanging out together almost every weekend, whenever possible. Pandemic hardly even slowed us down. And we'll remotely game if one of us feels not too terrible, but you know, terrible enough that we probably shouldn't expose people, which actually was really good because I had COVID and was probably I was probably contagious on Saturday night, which is our gaming night. So it's a good thing.
Yeah, you gotta be careful on those ones. But yeah, so what's the game that you guys are making?
All right. Well, we've called it Chrome. Originally, when he started creating this game, it was before Chrome was a actual system by Microsoft. So he claims the name first. I don't know how much evidence he has for that, but you know, there's not going to be probably a whole bunch of legal arguing over who thinks what is what. But he called it Chrome because, of course, you know, Chrome and Cyberpunk are relatively, you know, related to each other. And he was unhappy with everything for Cyberpunk out there. There was too much magic in his Shadowrun and too little magic in Cyberpunk, you know, 2020, 2013, and probably now Red as well. And he just liked the world, loved the stuff. the later books, there is actually some, at least mysticism, if not mystical hijinks going on in the books, if you've read them. There are some people who do things like, what were they doing? It's the Loa and the spiritual mystics seem to be doing something, but you weren't really quite sure what. And he basically sat down and made some very hardcore rules for the magic system. It's kind of low magic, high tech, and so, and much like Shadowrun, you also, the more tech you put inside yourself, the more likely you are to have problems with your magic. So he kind of bounced all that out.
So how do the D10s work into it? So is it a percentile system, or is it purely based off of the D10s themselves, or?
It is a open-ended 3D10 system. And what you do is you basically roll your 3D10s. If you roll a 1, it doesn't mean much. If you roll 2 1s, it means that you have some sort of little problem that happens. And if you roll 3 1s, you probably fail your roll and something bad happens completely. But that's very rare because it's, you know, 1 in 1,000.
Yeah.
But it will crop up occasionally. So that's something to be, you know, to keep an eye on. Could happen. And then the D10s are open. So if you rolled a 10 and then another 10 and then a 7, like my co-gamer James has done on a fairly frequent basis, it's kind of his dice just explode all over the place. They love rolling 10s for some reason. And me, I'm lucky if I get, you know, 15 off of 3D10. So we've got a broad spectrum for the group. You take those, the whatever your highest dice are, or actually you take all of your dice, add them to the thing, and then you add your stat, which ranges from -3 to +15. So that way you can have things like really awesome characters, and you can have cyberware enhancements, and even some chemical modifications to your system. So if you're on alcohol, might make you a little bit more sociable, but could make you, you know, less accurate in combat, for example. And then those things like add minor benefits and drawbacks, as well as potentially getting you addicted, which is a problem. And then if you have a relevant skill, the skill applies. Or it's a 2x your base stat if you don't have a skill, and possibly a penalty. So you basically add stat, dice, skill, and any special tool modifiers, like a weapon that's really accurate or things like that. So yeah, together, if you beat the target number, great, you hit it. If you are shooting somebody, for example, and you beat the target number by 10, you've hit them in a place that isn't protected by their armor. And, you know, it basically kind of spirals out from there. There are some unusual things in the system that I really love. If you get ambushed, you don't have a baseline. You roll your luck. And you take 2 times your luck, add it to 3, and then add your 3d10 roll. And that's your luck defense at that point. And there are some characters built around the concept of, I'm just lucky anyways, so you're really not going to hit me very often. It's my best defense. So, for example, if somebody ambushes you and they decide to shoot you, it might be really hard to hit you. It might be really easy, depending upon just how lucky you are. We do other things like that, so...
Is there a spot that folks can go to? Does he have it published or put out anywhere? Or is it just something you guys are playing with internally between the three of you?
Right now it's internally. We are planning on making it at least CCYA SA, which should be, you know, we just want to have credit for having done it.
Right.
He is perfectly willing to put the entire thing out public domain. I'm like, wait. It's a really good system. As a matter of fact, when I was there, when the first time we tried the dice mechanics out, I absolutely hated them. I was like, I'm never going to play a game like this. And no, now I'm playing it all the time.
So if you guys do go to release, it would be something that people would find on Itch, or would it be on drive-through, or directly from like your website or somebody else's?
We would probably have links directly from my website. My group is honestly, they don't care about the outside world in many ways, would be a good way to phrase it. Like, you know, they don't listen to podcasts. They hardly even knew that there was something going on with the OGL.
That I think is way more common than people realize. Those of us who are in the, that continue to seek content online for the hobby, whether that be via social networking or YouTube or whatever. There's the reality of how we view the hobby versus those who are, this is my Saturday and I go and I play and then I put it down and I go back to my date. It's two different realities on how they view the hobby. Something that could be a massive shakeup for, say, myself or yourself is a nothing. It's a gust of wind that we happen to spew at them. They're like, whatever, man, roll some dice and you're done. But yeah, all right, well, cool. So I'll have links to your website and hopefully in the not-so-distant future that'll show up. Let me roll a D12. I unfortunately do not, because I'm rolling a traditional D12. I can't do the fancy show it to the camera, which is for folks that play a lot online and prefer to show their rolls like I do. That's one really, really good selling point for these dice that Alex has made, is that he was able to roll and just held it up to the camera and it was super readable and easy, and he didn't have to have another camera pointed down to the dice tray. But you're going to have to trust me on what I roll here. So let's see.
I'm willing to trust you.
And I got a 10. Other genres. Okay. So you put this. What is other genres prompt from you?
So I listen to you a lot, and you seem to be very much in like the OSR and general fantasy. I honestly love superheroes. I am a longtime Hero System fan. I also love Prowlers and Paragons. I mean, probably my first nerd stuff was honestly a way old Orange and Green, I want to say is the title. It is the Hulk and the Thing team up from Marvel. So
funny enough, I have not played a superhero RPG. I'm aware of them. I know they exist. I've seen them. I've just not actually sat at a table and played one. I've played sci-fi games, various sci-fi games. I find that I always kind of maintain that fantasy is the focus point of the tabletop RPG because it provides because medieval times has conditioned us all to envision what a fantasy land looks like. Whereas a cyberpunk world or a sci-fi world, there are so many different renditions of what those could be. And the reality of those change so dramatically that it's harder to have a shared common imagination point for them. That I think generic fantasy has a generic common point for most people, not everybody, obviously, but for most people, if you've watched any of the source material, you've probably got a good idea. Whereas a sci-fi fan, I'm a big sci-fi book and movie fan, but the theaters of possibilities in sci-fi is so vast compared to what most of the fantasy is relatively close. So that's why I think one is definitely more prevalent than the other. Yes. But as far as a genre that I would like to play that I haven't had a chance to yet. Superheroes would be there. I am a big fan of DC is my jam. I know Marvel's the hotness right now, but DC has always been my thing. Another podcaster, Jason, recently did a whole series of podcasts, I want to say in November, all of noir mysteries type RPGs. And a lot of those sounded really, really cool. And there's a new one that came out from Free League recently called Vason. And it's a kind of, I don't even know the period. Would it be Victorian age time it's period? It's
not industrial.
Yeah, it's in a weird time period. But it's again, a very more of a mystery style game. And I have a copy of it. They had a really cool Kickstarter or Humble Bundle or one of them where they released a bunch of this stuff all together. So I got some of that. I haven't gotten a chance to play it yet, but that's on my list of trying to get more of like a mystery, because I think it would challenge the player skill side. I think that's the other thing too, is that a lot of people, if they've played a lot of fantasy, you have your player skill in fantasy, and sometimes that player skill is not going to translate to another genre with different tropes and different problems to solve. So I'm interested to see if player skill works whenever you switch to, say, a mystery style game.
That is absolutely one of the things I love investigating and looking into, is like, you know, we have, I don't want to subdivide the skills you develop in role-playing to such a point that like you sort of have this sort of brain map sort of thing going on, but there are so many things, and you're just like looking at somebody and already you'll be watching a live action, you know, play or a live play, and going, why is this guy going this way? I mean, that's obviously not what is really happening in the game. why is he not doing this? And it's sort of one of the things I wanted to explore with my TV show was like, you know, why did you go that way? That's not what the GM was trying to communicate with you. And I understand it's like maybe one of your player goals or things like that, but that's not what they were putting out there. And what you were picking up was, you know, definitely not the same thing. But it's interesting. And it's like maybe a failed skill roll would be a way to phrase it, you know?
Yeah. All right. You want to do another D12?
Sure, I will happily do another D12. As a matter of fact,
attention, all brave adventurers. Are you tired of lugging around a shaggy dice bag that makes you roll a critical failure on your charisma checks? Well, fret not, because Manscaped.com is here to help. With their Performance Package 4.0, you will have everything you need to make your dice bag one of the cleanest at the table. The Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer is waterproof and equipped with ceramic blades, giving a +1 to safety. There is even a handy-dandy LED flashlight for those late-night dungeon crawls. There's also the Crop Preserver deodorant, which will keep your dice bag smelling fresh and ready for adventure. So why settle for a dice bag that is anything less than top-notch? Head over to manscaped.com and use the promo code REDCAP for 20% off and free shipping. Display your D20s and tidy up your dice bag with Manscaped. Just remember to use the promo code REDCAP and you'll get 20% off and free shipping.
And
we got, I'm going to take the one, I think I'm supposed to be reading a 10, but we just did 10, so I'm going to pick 5.
Okay. All right.
Because it was right above it on the yep. number line there. So number 5 is the dead. Are we talking undead?
We certainly can. I think that as you get an older person, you end up running into losses eventually. Both your characters, you know, you love the characters. One of the things we mentioned was that my daughter had passed away. That was really a big thing for me in some ways. But, you know, you lose gaming buddies and you lose, you know, important people to yourself and your family. And you know, the whole pandemic thing has been kind of harsh on people. And sometimes you just need to talk about that.
Yeah, I think it's also like on that kind of same thought process. One of the things I was thinking, I didn't get a chance to do very much of it this past year. And obviously the 2 years before that with the pandemic, nothing was happening. But this past year, I didn't get a chance to travel as much as I wanted to. And one of the things I wanted to travel down for was to go to some conventions, and especially some of the OSR conventions that bring in a lot of the quote unquote old guard, and allow you to sit down and play some of these games with them. Because if you stop and you think about it, the hobby as a whole has been, it's coming up on 50 years, right? We're getting to the 50 year anniversary. Most of the people that started playing it at the very beginning were already in their, you know, 20s to 40s in that age group. And so these people are not getting any younger and they're not going to be around forever. And it's a very different viewpoint of how they see the hobby. And I think it's an experience if you have a chance to. So one of the things I really want to do is get to some of these tables and play with some of these people before, unfortunately, they roll a natural one on time remaining and leave us. But I think everybody has their own times where they sit and they think about their own mortality and stuff. I try really hard not to, because it messes with my head quite a bit. But I do think about, I want to make sure I get certain things and say things to people before it's not a possibility to see or meet or greet or say the things to people that I want to.
Yeah, right. So, yeah. Not to make you too sad, but just, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, yes, you should go down. And as a matter of fact, I should have absolutely no excuse not for going down to the one in Dallas, Fort Worth, because I'm actually from there. I'm a native Texan and Dallasite, and it's the one, and you know, Mike and Liz are there, and yep. Be like, hey, you know, I'm a fan, woohoo! And Corbett was there last year, and it's just like, oh my gosh, and you know, say perhaps crew shows up, and they've got, and all sorts of old guard are there. Like, you know, you could play at a table with Jeff D, who's just sitting there walking his, you know, his superhero characters instead of being tied up somewhere else.
You know. And for anybody who doesn't know what which con we're talking about in that case, it's the North Texas RPG Con, it's kind of the premier or the named OSR convention. Other conventions obviously are maybe bigger. North Texas RPG Con keeps itself specifically, I forget what the number is now. I want to say it's somewhere between 500 500 and 1,000, something like that.
Right at 500 is what they aim for. It's just the right size where they have, you know, plenty of people show up, and they've hardly ever had to turn anyone away.
Yeah, and it's the games and the style of games that at least I personally really enjoy. So that's why it's high on my list. There's definitely other cons. If you're a person that's more into some of the more modern games, there are tons of cons for that. But if you enjoy TSR era / OSR style gaming, North Texas RPG Con is definitely where you want to go, especially if you want to kind of meet some of those people, because they generally have a really good group of guests that come onto they fly them down, they put them up particularly for that reason, to let people meet people that have created and been around the hobby for a very long time. So so I don't have a whole lot else on that I can think of.
These aren't necessarily intended to be long in-depth things unless it triggers something. For you.
All right, sounds good. I'm going to pick one without rolling, because I had it on here and I wanted to see where you went with this one, because it was an interesting topic on here, and I know there'll be at least one listener that's going to get a chuckle whenever I pick it. Counter on Paladins. I am sure that somewhere Joe is going to, his ears perked up, even if he's not even anywhere near a device that plays sound. He just heard me say Paladins, and he's now like, they don't need gods. So go ahead and counter me and tell me that they don't need gods, and I'll tell you that you're wrong, and we'll move on. But
I'm going to tell you that the reason why they don't need gods is because clerics don't need gods.
Okay.
And there's obviously a very strong connection between the two. Especially in early OSR, there is a line, and I'm going to have to ask your listeners to search through their books and find this line. But it, basically, there's a line in the old school, I want to say either probably B or X books, and it's all jumbled up in my head, but the line that always stuck out to me was, you don't need to worship a god, you just need to follow good in order to be a good cleric. And that line is in there, and that was before Paladins came out. So I think that when they built the Paladins, they're like, you don't need to worship some, you know, fancy god to be that. Just be a servant of good and law, and, you know, good is your eat and law is your drink, and you will then be a paladin, and you don't need to follow a specific deity.
I'm going to counter you, because at that point in time, the idea of lawful and chaotic were that they were essentially gods without a name to them. They were a force of nature. They were the yin and the yang. They were gods without names. So if you were lawful or you were good and you were granted powers by that, you were essentially getting it just by without a named god. You didn't go and worship it, but it was a god without a name, which has always been my argument for, yeah, okay, sure, maybe you got your powers as a paladin from, you think you got it because you touched the tree and the tree gave you the power, whatever. But at the end of the day, with a paladin, my hill I will die on and plant my flag is that your powers can be revoked. In order for powers to be revoked, something has to judge. In order for something to judge, there has to be a conscious thing that's watched what you've done and went, nope, you broke a promise, you broke a vow, your powers are gone, and I'm yoinking them back. And in order for that thing to be there, it's just a god with a different name, whatever you want to call it. It's a higher power that granted the thing.
If you wish to stand at that point, I cannot necessarily too much disagree with you. I will. It's there. I probably forces beyond our comprehension that I would not consider gods on the same level as like a Thor representation or a Loki or Odin or any of those classic things. You're a DC guy though. Did you know that they had the Lords of Order and Chaos in the 60s?
No.
Before. As a matter of fact, to tie into the dead earlier, we recently lost the comics guys explain this. And he was a really big hero guy. He was actually one of the leaders of Hero System. He was a president in charge. I'm blanking on his name, but my podcast will give me the answer in about 10 seconds. But the Explain This guys were basically comic fans, and they would explain all the really strange things about comics. And it's by Demicles Games, and it is Darren Watts, who passed away in late December, like practically ganking out the old year, making sure it could continue to hurt us. Much like people thought that we had a, what's her name? The famous actress. But yeah, so, you know, Darren Watts passed away. He explained this. He also, one of the last ones he had was covering the summer. I'm not sure where that's at. But anyways, he would explain a lot of things about comics on his podcast. Just strictly about comics, pretty much. And so I'm wondering if at some point, because if you know Ernie Gygax, he was 17 when D&D was coming out big. You'll wind back the clock 6 years to 1967 when the Lords of Order and Chaos first came out in DC Comics. Is it entirely possible that Gary saw that and read or was told stories about it by Ernie? You know, I don't know. I mean, we'd have to hunt down people and ask them questions.
That's interesting. That
could be a place where people, I don't know if you're familiar with Ben Riggs and the Plot Points podcast. Okay. Get them on for, you know, reach out to them.
I definitely do want to reach out to Ben Riggs. Just so I can sit back and just let him talk. Because I think the knowledge that he's managed to gather up in his books, and if anybody's not familiar with that name, he's a D&D historian that has just a wealth of knowledge now after doing countless interviews and deep dives and research for his products. But yeah, I would love to be able to get him on. That would be an amazing conversation, I'm sure.
Yep. But you know, to reel back to where we were, you know, maybe that was something that inspired Gary to put Law and Chaos in his books, in addition to, you know, the other elements that all sort of came from the same sources. But it was probably part of the zeitgeist in the 60s and 70s, and, you know, things stick, and he kind of maybe arranged them around a little bit and played with them some. But looking at the timeline, I'm like, that's not out of the question that we could all, you know, that maybe DC Comics did have an impact on D&D that we weren't really aware of. You know, Jeff D would occasionally throw in a Magneto helmet or a other artifact from the comics into the D&D artwork, but maybe there's some lore there too that just was never recognized in Appendix N.
These people were all nerds, and they all enjoyed things. And nerds, no matter how many years have passed, we all kind of have the same interests, and we like to share them with each other. So if one person saw it, thought it was cool, they probably shared it around. So it wasn't a It's not a long leap to think that somebody who finds one thing really interesting hangs around with people who probably tangentially was into something else. So
yeah,
definitely see that. Where would the people go to find you and the dice, and how do they reach you on the Fediverse and everywhere else? Like, what's the central point that everybody should go to funnel to find you?
I generally primarily identify myself as Alexander_another_skip_Davis. And it's you can find me that way on Facebook, Instagram, and Mastodon. I'm kind of trying to get my IP all in a row is where I'm aiming for at some point. But it is a harder task than many people understand.
All right. And I'll have links to all of those. And the Turning Dice themselves has a website as well, right? It's
yes.
theturningdice.com.
Is turningdice.com. I've got a, you know, email reach out if somebody wants some, you know, like, well, what are these crazy things? And you know, I have to have some now, and I've got the money now. I'm like, okay, you know, reach out to me. I will happily make you whatever you want, pretty much. There's a couple of like extremist things I'd prefer not to do, but yeah, for example, the people can't see this, but if you've ever heard of Kerbal Space.
Oh yeah, yeah. The video game, the Kerbal Space where you're trying. Uh-huh. Yeah, I will describe it poorly, but I know what you're talking about, yes.
Yes. So yeah. So that is actually one of my gaming buddies. He likes Kerbal Space and has played it on occasion. And I have basically created docking rings for him in my dice style.
So for those who couldn't see it, I guess I will try to explain. Kerbal Space is a video game slash simulator where you're taking these little tiny minion looking people and blasting them off into outer space while trying to figure out how, you know, rocketry works. And it's can be very simulationist and it's quite fun. And if you enjoy really nerding out on space stuff, definitely pick up the game. It's runs on probably a toaster by now. But he held up one of his dice. He held it up and it looked like the docking ring of how two ships could connect together, or two components of the ships could connect together, which is very neat. He had it nicely. Is that engraved or painted in the lettering?
Actually, I cast the letters, painted the letters, and then put them inside the resin when it was time for me to cast the actual die itself.
So people can get words and names and customizations put into the rings in that way, into the dice that way, and make them their own. And you, so if you've got a character that's using a common dice, get the character's name into it, and hope that your GM isn't me and kills it off.
After a certain point, you kind of need to either trust your GM's gonna let your character live, or
roll the dice.
Yep, you roll the dice all the time. Hopefully, the dice with your character's name in them will be lucky enough to keep them alive longer.
So, the last question I ask everybody on the episode is, what should I have asked you? So, before you came on there, you must have been like, oh, I'm being asked to come on to a podcast. He's going to ask me questions. I wonder if he's going to ask me about this. Or you've heard some of the podcasts, so you've heard me ask this question. What should I have asked you that you would have liked to have me ask that you want to end the show off on? What's something that you want to put out there that I didn't bring up that you think I should have?
Well, there's sort of a related line here. So let's walk through this real quick. I've known she's probably right about my age, maybe a little bit younger than me. Her name's Mythica Griffin, or her original name that I met her under was Mythica Von Griffin. She was in the season one of body painting competition on Netflix and got to fifth place and then got kicked off. So she got eliminated early. But she is a vastly interesting person. If you ever get body painted by her, it's a transcendent experience. It will change your life. And I've known her since she was in her 20s and first came up to Gaming Group. And there's a group called, there was a store called Adventurers Guild in Castle Rock. And we played that game, played there, and we met there. And we reconnected on Facebook a while back. And we've been talking about things and doing things. And then I'm going to have her eventually make my dice with a sort of semi-mystical process. And it's called Organite, is the material they put in. And it is supposed to react with people. Now, if you're hard science, you can go, look, this is all placebo effect. This is, you know, it's, but if you believe there might be some magic out there in the world, this probably has a good chance of having some magic in it. But we're taking it a step further. We are working on a podcast where we will essentially do intense self-help sessions, record them, and then bookend them with us talking about it and the experience and how, you know, people can achieve goals over a month-long period. You give the therapist, which will be Mythica in this case, what you want her to do, what you want to work on. She'll interview you, help you build a character that needs to have that skill in order to solve the problems. And then because you've got your subconscious brain and your conscious brain both sort of working on the same goal, that will actually make a better, bigger change in you than just like a group therapy session or something else like that. And by doing it over a month-long period, we figure, you know, that should be the optimal time, because it takes about 30 days to get yourself aligned properly and using your new skills and things like that. And she's going to challenge people, and she's going to you know, really take them and put them to a new level of skill wise in their lives is the real hope.
And have you guys brainstormed out a name for what the podcast might be?
We currently really like, and because it's on a podcast, I'm more than willing to actually mention it here, because I can point out and say, well, you know, we talked about this for weeks. What are you doing? Okay. And so the podcast is, we're really like the name of Aegis RPG Podcast.
Aegis.
And it's just about Aegis. Yeah, as in like the shield of with the Medusa's right. head on it.
Yep, okay.
And you know, we thought about doing various fantasy systems. And you want fantasy for a very good reason, because you don't want the character to be yourself in the real world, because that's too close. And you don't want to be too weird. So you want to have that fantasy touchstone. So we went with Exalted.
Oh, interesting.
So she's got the system. We were actually supposed to talk about it this week, but I was too under the weather to talk about Monday. And we're going to reach out, have some gamers participate. It'll be a month-long thing, and then we'll put together a podcast and like talk about, what goals they wanted, what things they're trying to change and skills they're trying to build. And I'll be serving as a sort of backup GM and like outside monitor, which was sort of what I wanted to do with my TV show anyways. That way, people can look at it and go, hey, look, this is what we're doing. This person's not on the course we want them to be on, and help people really in the long run with gaming. And honestly, I think that this is something Gary had twigged onto really early, like in strategy and tactics days. I want to talk with his buddy. Oh boy, I can't remember the guy who was the editor of Dragon Magazine for
some. I know exactly who you're talking about. Curmudgeon.
Curmudgeon in the dungeon.
Why can I not think of his name right now?
Right. It's just.
Oh, what's wrong with my brain?
Right. It's okay. It's post-pandemic. We've all got stress and things like that going on. Oh, I can't. Right. And he would also be a great, person for you to reach out to as well.
Yeah, he's actually on my Tim Cask. Tim Cask. Thank you. I've played with Tim before. Yeah, I want to get him onto the podcast as well. Again, just for no other reason, just to pick his brain of times long ago. But yeah, I think what you're describing is important. I've gotten a bunch of feedback from a previous episode I've done where we talked a bit about some mental health stuff and things like that. And there was a lot of really good response coming back from it. A lot of thank yous and people saying that, it was nice to hear somebody who's talking about that in a frank manner. Right. So I think, yeah, if you guys go down that route, there's definitely a crossover between folks that are into this hobby that maybe don't feel comfortable having those discussions other ways, that maybe this sort of a podcast could really help you out with them. So I hope that works out really well.
Yep. And I think that it would be really helpful for professional GMs to like help overcome the sort of negative stigma over being a professional GM. If you're also going, well, I can help you with some of your like personal growth goals or therapy goals or things like that. That would make it there's a name for like a type of transaction that people don't like. And they coined the phrase, and of course now it slips my mind. It might even be on the D12 list, but there's not reductive, but there's a type of transaction. You would never see transaction on that list, would you?
I do not.
Okay.
Do
not. All right.
It would open people up to possibly doing that. I would urge you to maybe go. I recently did an episode with episode 126 of the podcast with Peter Young. And he does a lot of work with folks that suffer from autism and other such mental conditions.
He's the one that talks a lot about the kids, right?
Yeah, and
neurodiversity. And oh, I love that episode. That's such a good episode.
Yeah, and one of the things that he really brought up and that he's mentioned on his own blog and stuff as well is being very careful where you draw the line between helping and being friends and what have you and being therapy. So, yeah, professional GMs, if you don't have the training in it, just be real careful of how close to that line you toe. But I do think there's definitely a spot there where it can allow people to enter conversations that they wouldn't normally feel comfortable having. If they can put it into a different spot. And I see you've got a little friend there beside you.
I have my 3-year-old who loves saying hi to people on the internet, but very shyly, especially if she doesn't know them.
So I know this feeling well, and I'm sure most listeners have. If you've been working from home over the if you've been working from home for the last little while, you literally been Zoom bombed by either your own or your coworker's children. And it's always adorable. So hi there, little one. You want to say goodbye to everybody as we sign off for the podcast? Can you say bye to everybody?
Can you say bye-bye?
Bye.
Okay.
Thank you. Alex, thanks so much for coming on to the podcast. And I really appreciate you having the conversation with me. I will try to put as many pictures up. And if you're listening to this podcast on Spotify or later when it goes on to YouTube.
She's a singer.
Ooh, I can get a free theme song out of this. Keep going.
Yes, keep going. Uh-huh. You want to sing a song for Tampering? Okay. All right.
But I will put images and as much as I can so people can get a sense of what these dice look like. But I highly encourage people to go to turningdice.com where you've got a bunch of pictures there and on your Instagram as well. And really see these interesting, very different looking dice that I think, you know, could really capture some folks, especially if you're able to tie it in really well with the game system you're coming out with. Nobody gave those funky dice at DCC have a shot until there was a system tied to them. And right now they're selling off the shelves. So I wish you all the very best with that. I thank you so much for coming on and having this chat with me.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate all of your, you know, all of your podcasts and things like that. It's really a wonder and keep it up. All right.
Thank you. I will try to keep this going. It's been a blast. It's been easy because I've said this a bunch of times to people. It's very easy to do this one whenever the guests are all really awesome. So thank you for keeping that streak going. And I'm going to throw this to future me to do any editing that we have to do. And thank you again for coming on.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, folks, that's going to wrap up this episode of the podcast. I wasn't able to get the video of the dice in action like I had hoped to on this episode of the podcast, but there will be links down in the description that'll take you to Alexander's social media and you can see them in action there. And I'll try to include as many different links to pictures and videos of how they work as I possibly can. So as we close things down on this episode, I hope you enjoyed, you learned something, and that you were eager to come back for more. www.theredcaps.net has all the ways to contact me, and I would love to hear from you. Thank you ever so much for listening, and remember, never let your caps dry out. Stay safe, have fun, we'll talk again soon.